to Drive Through HR. Brian William and Nisha coming to you live every day talking with the folks who care about HR. Let's get to our guest. Christine, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good to hear your voice. Always good.
Good, good. Same with you guys. And gal.
Well, if you would. Yeah, absolutely. And if you would, kick it off, introduce yourself to our lovely family of listeners, and then we'll roll from there.
Right. Well, my name's Christine Assaf. I love to pronounce that last name because everybody tries to have trouble with that one. And I'm the HR generalist right now for waste management for the Gulf Coast area. Absolutely love working for the company. It's a great place to work. Just started and I'm still in the honeymoon phase, but loving it. And I've been in HR for a while, been in the business for about 6 years, and I've worked for a majority of different places, anywhere from big companies like Waste Management. I previously worked for a broadcasting company as well, publicly owned. And then I've also worked for small businesses. So I've kind of been round and about everywhere. I've always kind of been the sole person, you know, the one-man HR band, so to speak. And I've been in management for years. I've been doing management since I first started my very first job at my local YMCA, handling just the front desk people. And been doing it ever since. I have just a passion for training and development. The YMCA did a great job of investing in me as a person to become a trainer. And they saw a glimmer of that trainer in me. And so since then, I just love educating people and developing people to really grow with the company. So kind of something that I hold true to my heart there, to speak. But anyway, that's a little bit about me. And I live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And go Tigers. Go Saints. And I'm just enjoying and living life.
Nice. What's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
You know, I've been pondering that question for like the past week because I was getting prepared for this, and I was like, what am I going to say? What is going to be the absolute thing that I want to have here? And there's so many different answers I can come up with, but I really think the biggest one is becoming obsolete. And I think that's a big, big question right now that a lot of HR people have. You know, all this technology, everything moves so fast, keeping up to date, all these changes that are going on with healthcare and everything else. And it's, it's so easy for us to become obsolete. And as we have this younger generation, I will dare not say the M word, the younger generation coming up that, and then the older generation kind of aging out, it's, you got to keep up to date. You got to be with the new, so to speak. And so for me, I'm a big fan of just educating myself, whether it be in my job, and applicable knowledge, or if it's something that's more of all my own kind of thing. I want to keep up to date with the new trends and the new ways things are moving. So I also have a pet peeve when people don't keep up to date and they don't keep relevant. You know, I kind of look at it and I have to watch myself sometimes. I kind of look at it like, well, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have that hunger for that knowledge? So for me, that's what keeps me up at night, definitely.
What's core to HR for you? Like if you were building something, if you went into a company and let's just say they just started and they have a ton of money, how would you build HR today?
How would I build HR?
In this day and age,
yeah.
how would you start HR?
Well, I've actually been lucky enough to go into two small companies that never had an HR person there before ever. And there's the basics, and it's what I always like to say. You know, everybody's got to do payroll. Everybody's got to do, legal documents. We all have to do the nitty-gritty work. And unfortunately, it's there, and somebody's got to do it. It's got to get done. So there's that side of it, and there's always the administrative side of HR, I think. As we get bigger and as we grow, hopefully we can lessen that side by streamlining and creating more efficiency. And then not having to be in the weeds, as so to speak, so much. But I think the big thing for me is when we build it, it's smart business practices. I feel like a lot of HR people, we'll tend to hide behind policies and procedures and say, oh, no, you have to do it this way because this says this. Instead of really trying to be kind of that person that's the go-between that says, okay, let's think about smart business operations and smart practices that we can do, because when it comes down to it, we're all in this to make money. And let's see what we can do that keeps us legally out of any bad situations, but keeps us keeps us going, moving forward, and keeps us doing what we need to do, and sticking with that. So I think that a lot of HR people tend to go on the side of being the police officer rather than really being that, dare I say it, person at the table, you know, who really kind of helps to promote the business practices and make smart decisions. So I think a lot of common sense and a lot of knowing the business operations is really the building block of a good HR team and just good HR practices.
What can and cannot be automated in your mind from technology's perspective? Like, when we look at technology, there's just certain things, and this is really what I want to get you to answer, is things that can't be automated ever, just won't
right.
be automated.
You know, and I'm sure there's a bunch of them, and I I'm sure we could prioritize them, but big in my mind is just the coaching. But both the coaching and then face-to-face communication, because, you know, we live in the world where, you know, everybody's behind the phone, everybody's behind a computer, everybody's got their, you know, their technology right in front of them, and it's real easy for us to send the email or to write a memo, if anybody still does that, you know, things like that. But when it comes down to it, there's nothing that really replaces that face-to-face, one-on-one communication with someone so that things get understood correctly. And, you know, and not everybody's workforce is the same. I mean, my workforce is about half drivers, and these drivers, you know, they're not in front of a computer. Most of them don't even have internet at home. And so the way for us to communicate when we do open enrollment every year is we have to go out there and see them, you know, and we have to meet face-to-face. As much as we try to push, you know, go online and, oh, we're going to send you an email and things like that, when it comes down to it, unless you're right in front of them telling them what you need from them and communicating that, you know, one-on-one, then sometimes that gets lost. So I think a lot of times when it comes to coaching and managers sitting down and coaching their employees, that really can't be done automated. I mean, I'm sure portions of it can be, but there's always that human touch that gets lost.
When you're the only one in HR, how do you stay motivated, or how do you motivate yourself? And how do you keep your inspiration going when there's no one else to bounce ideas off of, et cetera?
Well, the good news is that actually I'm on a team now, so it's not just me. I'm not anymore. I have a great team that I work with, my boss and a couple of the other HR employees, and we work really well together. So it's wonderful. We're all spread out through the Gulf Coast, so it's great because, you know, each of us is in a separate office, but we talk pretty much on a daily basis. But I have been in the situations where I'm the one-man HR person, and I'll tell you, it's tough. It's tough to keep motivated because you constantly feel like you're either the, you know, you feel like the bosses don't like you because you're always stifling them, and you feel like the employees want to see results, and if you don't give it to them, they feel like you're useless. And so it can be real difficult to be that, you know, person who kind of tips the scales one way or the other with whatever the need is. And so I think that the big way that I always kept motivated and I still keep motivated is to connect with like-minded people. You know, I'm very active on Twitter and I blog to keep myself going, and I try to keep together with a lot of mentors. Robin Schooling is just a wonderful person who I have in my life, and I'm fortunate to have her there because she keeps me motivated. But it's things like that I try to keep when I'm that one person HR and I'm trying to remember what am I doing this for. So they help. You know, that kind of helps me to remember the ultimate goal.
What's HR like in the South?
Oh goodness, you know, it's really tough, and I'll say this: I've never worked in HR not in the South, so I don't know what it's like elsewhere. But down here, we just tend to grasp on to things, new trends, and a little bit slower than everybody else. And you know, it's the stereotypical South that sometimes it's a little bit of you have to deal with a little bit of racism and sexism and things like that, unfortunately. And I'm sure it's everywhere, but I think it happens more frequently than I'd like to admit here. And so you have to be open to the idea that's going to exist and that's going to occur, but be able to work with those people without you know, coming down on like a hammer on anybody. I think that it gets better as we go and as the, you know, generations grow and the old ways kind of go away. But there does tend to be a little bit of a an old school method here, and sometimes you have to just kind of acknowledge that it's there and work around it.
Yeah, do you feel that it's just more overt? You see it in the workplace because it's, you know, just being in the South versus some of the other parts of the country? Or do you, curious on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's more overt. I think it's, you know, it's something that we don't like to admit happens, I think, but it does. It's because you've got kind of you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, some of our politics aren't necessarily as good as they should be. And so, you know, we still kind of have that old school, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours mentality down here. And I don't know that it's, like I said, I've only worked in the South, so I don't know if it's predominant. I can't really compare it to anything. But I do feel like we get that rap, and I don't think that it's necessarily something that's not true.
Go ahead, sorry.
I think that I'll say that in my time I have perceived and I have seen various things where it's kind of the boys only club and things like that or you'll see a little bit of and it might be definitely the demographic, you know, down in the South, you know, the demographics are just different, and so that might be that as well.
Do you feel that social technology, social media, the whole social movement has changed that landscape at all over the last 4 or 5 years?
Oh yeah, I would think that when you get into the more when you get into the bigger cities like New Orleans and Baton Rouge, I mean, I think that you find that it's definitely a little bit more. Even Lafayette, actually, you find more of that social media, that technology. Baton Rouge's technology is actually growing and growing and growing. It's doing much, much better. My husband's in IT, and I can tell you, it's just it's getting bigger and better. But, you know, you still have kind of that blue-collar workforce that you're going to always kind of have, which is the, you know, the petrochemical plants and the offshore plants and everything else that's around here. And so because you have that blue-collar worker, for the most part, half of my guys are drivers. These are people who don't have smartphones. You know, they don't have internet. I'm saying generally speaking. So you're not going to have that big of a push, but it's getting better. It's growing. It's getting better. And again, you know, that younger workforce is aware of it and knows where it is and is growing up to utilize it on a daily basis.
So what do you, we've talked a little bit about kind of the younger workforce. And so what are some of the absolute positives that you see out of kind of the generational shift, the workforce coming in that you run into?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm a, you know, the whole generation talk always bugs me, and I fear it every time I start to see articles that talk about, oh, these millennials and, you know, why they're terrible, and you know, they're usually written by baby boomers. But the point is that this younger workforce, they're really, really open-minded. They really are. These are people who have grown up with the idea that the internet is just there, and any knowledge that you need to have is there. You know, they're training differently. You know, they're learning what they need to learn. They're going online and researching it themselves. They're connected all the time, and so they just think differently. They think in a way that really doesn't have any boundaries. And so I really feel like this younger generation is going to come up and is going to really come up with some of these just creative, wonderful ideas. And so they're really great at that. And so it's real easy for the older generation to come and say, okay, well, it's great, you're creative, but I still need you to make widgets from 8 to 5, you know. And so it's definitely that push and shove, right? Of really kind of, you know, gauging that we don't want to stifle this creativity, we don't want to stifle these young people coming in. We want them to be able to feel like they can move and grow and develop and come up with those new ideas and really throw them at us. But we also need them to make widgets. So that's where you know, really good management, really good coaching and comes into play. And so this older generation is having to learn how to deal with that. And so that's where I think that the issues always arise, where you see these articles.
Sure. Especially like Louisiana. This is the Republic of Louisiana, I might add. It is the skill, like the gap for skilled workforce and the availability of those people has just immense, because we have a big connection between obviously Oklahoma and Tulsa, because we have a lot of energy companies that have locations in Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. And I know that's the biggest threat right now, is the fact that they need 1,500 welders or 1,500 whatever skilled workers. How do you approach that? I mean, that's a gigantic macro issue.
Yeah, we have a recruitment issue. I mean, we really, really do. And that's one of the things that we have happen a lot. You know, we'll have our drivers are just DOT CDL guys who drive for us, and you know, we'll lose them to some of these plants sometimes, who can just offer more than what we can offer. Or you know, or you've got technicians, you know, diesel technicians. It's hard to find. You know, I guess you have your diesel technicians who've been around for a while, kind of those that the older generation of guys, and then you've got these young guys who come from military or something like that, and we're trained, and we try to recruit them. But you're certainly right, and I think the issue is that you're finding, and I don't have anything to back this, but I think that skilled labor is going to definitely become somewhat of a need for every business. Every business across the board is going to say, oh my gosh, where are our electricians and plumbers and drivers and all of these different things that we need, because it's just so few and far between. And, I think that when it comes down to it, I'd love to see businesses themselves, almost private industry, start to really take an investment in universities or trade schools, you know, and try to really get that skilled labor. I know ExxonMobil here in Baton Rouge works a lot with local universities and things like that to really try to build that skilled network, so then they can have them to come in. I think that you'll see businesses really try to invest in that. I don't want to get them when they're, you know, I want to try to touch these kids at age 16 to get them in here and to try to get them to learn a trade and come in here and work for me, because we're gonna start having these gaps. I mean, if we don't already. So I agree with you. It's a definitely a difficulty, and it's something that we try hard to retain.
Well, let me do a quick reset. Everybody, we're talking with Christine, one of my favorite HR pros in the country, because you are like in the middle of it. You have all the things going on that our listeners love to talk about. So I just wanted to kind of get your take on what – I know we talked about a little bit about what kind of keeps you fired up and everything, but what's the one thing that if you could just blue ocean, I want to change everything in human resources, talent management, human capital, what's the one thing that you would just wave your magic wand and change today?
Oh, gosh. Man, you give me the tough questions. If there would be one thing that I could change just specifically in HR, I would require every HR person in the world to start their own blog and or Twitter and or LinkedIn and or Facebook or whatever the case may be. I would like every HR person to become their own personal PR agent for themselves or for their, you know, for HR. And it's mainly because I feel like we do a lot of the, oh, woe is me HR person. I'm the lonely HR person. I'm out on this island and, you know, there's nothing for me. Or even just the, you know, I'm the beaten down HR person. And I really think that a lot of times we don't really kind of wear our badge proudly and say, hey, we make a difference and we're really into this, to this social media, and we're really up to date, and we're fresh, and we're young, and we're new, and we're right there with it. Because I think that the perception that we're giving is what we're getting back. You know, we're tired of not being heard, and we're tired of not getting a seat at the table, and all of those kind of things. And it's our own damn fault is when it comes down to it, because we're just not giving that perception to others of that we're capable of doing what we're doing. And so if we become that PR, that marketing agent for ourselves, and we say, hey, look, I'm interested in learning more. I'm interested in social media. I'm interested in keeping up to date with what's going on in my field. I'm joining my local SHRM chapter. I'm doing the things that I need to do to really like grow as a career in this, and not just pushing the paperwork every day. Then, man, I just feel like our entire career and our entirety of human resources would just grow. I think that's the first step. I think the first step is to look inward and to say, what can I do personally to be a better HR person?
Nice. This is from the Twitter sphere. Got a question on training and development. And so I wanted to ask you, how should we go about training? So I know that you've inherited a couple different training programs in your life, but how should we train people these days?
Right. Well, I have a pet peeve with training and development, mainly because I go to a lot of training and development, via SHRM and conferences and things like that. And then I also, have my own that I do, and then, of course, through my company. And so I've kind of come up with like a universal kind of three things in my brain that I really feel like training and development really needs to be. And one is it has to be relevant. It has to be relevant to today and to now. You can't have any old school methods. Maybe sometimes the old school does, stay true, but for the most part, it's got to be relevant to what's going on in the company and what's happening. And then it's got to inspire some sort of change. It's got to inspire somebody to say, I want to take action. And if it doesn't, then it's going to just, end up being notes that are written on a piece of paper, and then they get shuffled into the, this conference that I went to, or this training that I went to, and it gets put away. And then your employees won't seem interested. If they don't feel like they can do the change, if they don't feel like they can make any of the action, then what's the point? And then the last one is it's got to, and it kind of ties into number two, is it's got to be useful. It's got to be able to be used, so to speak, which means that they have to be able to take some of it and say, well, this is stuff that I can do tomorrow, and I'll go into my job tomorrow and do it. And so I hate when I go to trainings, and no offense to those motivational speakers out there, they're great, but I hate when it's motivation, 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 and then there's no content, like what can I do with this? You made me feel great, that's wonderful, but what can I do with this, and how can I put it into my daily life? And so it's got to be, in my mind, it's got to be those three things to really affect people. And so so that's really what it comes down to. It now, that's when we talk about training and development, that's different than change management. So when you're talking about like, well, we're training somebody on something, but it's something that they don't want to have happen, that's a whole different ball game. Then we talk about buy-in and all of that, and so you have to add that facet to things whenever you're talking about training and development on something new, on something that will affect the change within the organization. So,
as it relates to onboarding, how would you do onboarding differently from a training and development perspective?
I've done a bunch of different onboardings at a lot of different companies, and I feel like it's such a company specific thing. It really, really is, because I've done them in so many different ways, and I would venture to say not two onboarding programs ever look the same. They have similarities, but they never look the same because the size and what the people are. I did a great onboarding program at a local online retailer, and we had them do customer service hours where they were required every person from executive down to whoever a part-time maintenance person was to sit with customer service and listen in on customer phone calls, and it was great, and it was wonderful, and it worked for them, and it was really good. Now, that's not going to work at every location, and it's not going to work here. But I definitely think that I'm old school. I'm old school in this. I do like the fact of actually having some sort of orientation. There's got to be some sort of sit down and meet with HR person, or sit down and meet with whoever the orientation person is, there's got to be someone who sits down and says, let me talk about your employment with this company. And I feel like that has to happen because I feel a lot of times we'll take employees and we'll say, oh, hey, here you go. Here's your 8-to-5 job. Here's your uniforms, and go. And they never get that moment to stop and ask questions. And they're not going to ask them until they sit down and think about it. Oh, when are my vacation days? Oh, when are when's this? When's that? And when you sit down and go over that with them, they have that opportunity to really meet someone. And again, that one-on-one, that face-to-face, sometimes is real beneficial. So I feel like an onboarding program, you know, I'm going to cop out of the question and say that I feel like they most of the time they vary, but I do think that there definitely has to be some type of orientation that's involved in getting that person on board. And then, of course, you know, a progressive training and development program that goes thereafter. We used to have something at one of my companies that was a 30, 60, 90 day where we would review how they were doing every 30, 60, and 90 days, and we had a chart for it, and we tracked everybody to see if they were learning those tasks that were listed on that job description at the 30, 60, and 90, and they had to meet certain levels. I think at the 30, they had to be able to do it with someone looking over their shoulder. At 60, they had to be able to do it by themselves, and then at 90, they had to be able to have the ability to train someone else how to do that. And so, you know, that kind of thing, you know, worked for that company and, you know, could potentially work elsewhere. So,
nice. Everyone's misunderstood. Where are you misunderstood most often and why?
Oh, goodness. You know, I heard actually my husband told me that he overheard, or he was talking to someone and someone referred to me as intimidating, and I just never ever would use that word to describe myself. I don't think I'm intimidating at all. I tend to be a very you know, open and gregarious person. So me personally, I found when I heard that, I went, oh my goodness, I never heard that before, that I was intimidating. But then I come back to the idea that that in my job and what I do on a daily basis can be intimidating. You know, there's always that HR stigma of, oh God, you know, run, here comes the HR lady. And so in some cases, I would assume that people would fear me or fear just the HR person in general because of, you know, that perception of power, which is funny because they really don't know that we have no power whatsoever. But the point is that they referred to me as intimidating, or is that people would think that that HR is intimidating. I find interesting, and it's something I probably need to work on, because if I'm getting that kind of reputation, I definitely don't want to come across as intimidating. So that was something interesting.
Nah,
you think intimidating's okay? I'm just going to be the police,
you're not.
You know, yeah. Just come down with the hammer all the time.
You can't control anybody else's stupid perception. So you're just confident. That's all. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, and that's probably the truth. That's probably the truth. But you know, and just like with anything, when people do tend to call me confident, and what I always say is that, you know, that if you perceive confidence, know that there's a million different, like, second guessings going on in my brain. So, you know, with confidence always is the second guessing internally. But yeah, I think that HR probably, you know, definitely down here, I would say that most HR people either get the misconception of being kind of the clerk, you know, the old personnel person, and that definitely happens. And I think that that's misunderstood a lot of times. And then, you know, that usually comes down from the manager side. And then from the employee side is the intimidation, where they're intimidated to talk to HR, you know, for scared reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got about a minute left. Christine, tell people where they can connect up with you, and maybe where's the next place conference you're going to be or attend, so that people might meet you in real life.
Absolutely. You can find me, I blog on hrtact.com, as in tactful, hrtact.com. I'm also on Twitter at hrtact. You can email me at hrtact@gmail.com. I haven't blogged pretty frequently. You know, it's always the job always seems to get in the way. Damn it. But then you can also find me at different conferences. My husband's in IT, so I attend a lot of IT conferences and try to do some management and coaching from the other side, from the management table, resume and interview tips for a lot of these IT guys who just need some help with that. I've attended two of those in the past 2 months, but don't have any planned out just yet. I think the next time I'll probably speak at a conference is probably going to be in August, but then there's also the Louisiana SHRM conference that I'm sure I'll be in attendance to, and that I think is March or April. I'm not sure what day it is, but I'll be there. And then I'm frequently at the Greater Baton Rouge SHRM meetings, and I'm on their board of directors right now, and so that whole thing.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for spending lunch with us. And, folks, we got to roll. It is time. Talk to you tomorrow.